Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining the call to discuss the final results of the studies conducted for Senate Bill 350, the Clean Energy and Pollution Reduction Act. My name is Christina Osborne. I work in the customer service group here at the ISO. Also joining me in the room is Dr. Keith Casey, the Vice President of Market and Infrastructure Development, and also Tom Dowdy, who is the Vice President of Customer and State Affairs. Earlier this morning, we posted the results. They are on the Regional Energy Markets webpage. We, in addition to an aggregated report, we also published the individual volumes to make it easier to find the information related to a specific topic. Today, Dr. Casey is going to summarize the key findings of the studies. At the end of his presentation, we'll open it up for questions. We're going to go into there'll be a more in-depth review of the findings at the Joint State Agency Workshop in Sacramento on July 26. Details about that workshop are also available on the Regional Energy Markets webpage. Just to let you know, this call is being recorded. We'll make the recording available on that webpage in the next couple of days. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Keith Casey.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you all on the call for attending. I know we only have a short amount of time to cover what's a pretty extensive set of results, so I'll try to be succinct here. But, essentially these results are the culmination of an 8-month study process that provided a lot of opportunity for public input along the way. The scope of the SB 350 studies were quite extensive. It called for examining the overall benefits to California ratepayers, emissions, greenhouse gases, other pollutants, impacts on jobs in California, into the California economy, environmental impacts in California and elsewhere, and impacts of disadvantaged communities in California, and importantly, assessment of the reliability and impact on the integration of renewable energy resources. So a very, very broad scope to examine. And to undertake this, we assembled a top-notch team of consulting firms with not only national expertise in this area, but extensive international experience. The Brattle Group was engaged to lead the effort. The Energy and Environmental Economics developed the renewable portfolio scenarios and the integration benefit assessment. And on the jobs and impact California economy, we used a firm based in Berkeley called Berkeley Economic Advising and Research. And then finally on the environmental assessment, the Aspen Environmental Group was retained to do that assessment. So this team worked very collaboratively to produce this report. It is quite an extensive document. As Christina mentioned, there are 12 volumes in total, 688 pages, so a very significant piece of work. The main report is Volume 1, which is roughly about 90 pages. There's an executive summary. So I'd say for those of you that just want to get a quick read of what the overall study findings are, I would point you to Volume 1. And then the subsequent volumes really do a deeper dive in each of the areas we analyzed. I know we have a diverse set of stakeholders on the call. Some are fully immersed in these studies, and some are following them loosely. I know there's a lot of interest for those that are more immersed and just wanting to get to the bottom line of what changed since the May 24th results. So I'll start with that, and you can decide at that point whether you want to continue on the call. Essentially, we took a hard look at all the comments we received. We had over 32 comments, literally several hundred pages of comments to review. But fundamentally, we felt the main study assumptions and scenarios that we relied on for our base benefit assessment in the May study were still appropriate to maintain. So overall, the fundamental findings documented in the report are very similar and in many cases identical to what you saw on the May 24th, 25th presentation. However, the report did include some additional sensitivities that were asked from stakeholders. I won't give you an exhaustive list, but just some examples. We did, there was a request on the 2030 scenarios that we do a full-blown economic analysis of the non-RPS wind that was assumed in the regional market scenarios in 2030, that if we took that non-RPS wind out, what would the ratepayer benefits look like for California? So we did perform that sensitivity. With regard to the 2020 production cost results and the coal dispatch, there were a lot of questions and concerns around what was driving the reported slight increase in coal dispatch in 2020 and a desire to see some additional analyses and sensitivities done on that, which were done and documented in the report. And I would note there's a couple of sensitivities we noted that we are going to do, but these were not able to be completed in time for the report, so we are going to provide them as an addendum that will come out later next week. And they're really just two sensitivities. One is a high energy efficiency sensitivity where a number of stakeholders asked that we conduct the full ratepayer analysis on a high energy efficiency sensitivity, since SB 350 calls for a doubling of energy efficiency. So we are committing to do that. And then we're also adding a high RPS scenario where we're modeling a 60% RPS. We haven't yet determined whether we'll do the full ratepayer analysis on that, but we'll at least look at it from a renewable portfolio investment savings standpoint. So stay tuned for those, but that should be a relatively limited document that just summarizes the results from those two sensitivities. Additionally, you know, there were a number of refinements that were made to the study and the presentation of material. Again, I'll just give you some examples. We had a lot of sensitivities that we presented in the May 24th, 25th workshop. There was a desire to see those more consolidated so that you could get a more holistic view of how robust the benefit results are under these various sensitivities. So we provided that. There were some refinements to how we calculate CO2 emissions that result in some minor changes in the CO2 reported emissions, particularly in the 2020 case for California. But again, these were very, very minor changes. There was a request for a more seasonal assessment of air emissions. We had reported annual emission numbers for criteria pollutants. There was a desire to see a more seasonal breakout, so we provided a breakout by summer season for the criteria pollutants. And I would say just more generally, many of the comments were asking for greater clarification or justification for certain study assumptions or analytic approaches, and we've tried to be as responsive as we could to all of those requests. And I think the final report will reflect that, but I would also note that we did, in addition to the report, publish a standalone document that is a response to stakeholder comments. That is a 150-page document that summarizes all of the comments we received on June 22nd or thereabouts, and you know, provides a detailed response to each of those. So if you're looking for how your specific comments were considered, I would encourage you to take a look at that document for that information. And then additionally, I would note since the workshop on May 24th, 25th, we had provided all of the modeling assumptions and data supporting that analysis. And that triggered a lot of questions during the intervening time between the workshop and the publication of this report. So there were a lot of individual responses to questions about the data and the study, and we consolidated all of those in a public document that's available for everyone as well. So in addition to the actual data, there's about a 100-page document responding to questions about the data. So obviously a huge amount of material out there, but I think it really demonstrates our commitment to, you know, really trying to be responsive to the questions and input we received along the way. So let me go segue into the a summary of the results. And just to reorient everyone, again, some people are less immersed in this than others, but for the benefit of level setting with everyone, the study in examining the benefits of regional market looked at two study time frames, a 2020 study year and a 2030. You can think of the 2020 case as the earliest a regional market could start to take shape. We looked at two scenarios in 2020, a current practice scenario, which is essentially the ISO as it is today with its operational footprint, and then a limited regional scenario that has the ISO and PacifiCorp. PacifiCorp, of course, is the only utility to date who's come forward and expressed interest publicly in exploring full participation in the ISO. So we incorporated them as a kind of a you know, first mover on this regional market. And then the 2030 case is really reflecting, you know, a more full regional market where we envision this will ultimately go, and that includes a much larger regional footprint encompassing most of the U.S. Portion of the West, with the notable exception of the public marketing agencies, which, by the way, was done just to provide a more conservative assumption, not because we've had any direct feedback from them that they are not interested in participating in regional markets. In fact, Western Upper Great Plains is a member of a regional market, so there's certainly evidence that you know, they may very well want to join this regional market. But nonetheless, to provide a you know, less than extreme bookend, we omitted the public marketing agencies, and we looked at a current practice, again, with the ISO as its operational footprint today, and with a 50% portfolio that was predominantly in-state resources, but some out-of-state. And we contrasted that current practice in 2030 with two regional market scenarios. One we call Regional 2, the other we call Regional 3. Regional 2 has a very similar 50% portfolio to the current practice. It's predominantly in-state, predominantly solar. And then we contrasted that with in the Regional 3 case, a more Western diverse renewable portfolio that had more resources outside of California, particularly quite a bit of wind in Wyoming, New Mexico. So these renewable portfolios were necessary to assess the benefits of the regional market in 2030, but we really stressed in the study that the purpose of this study is not to provide direction to California on how it should go about meeting its 50% RPS. We just needed to come up with some plausible scenarios to test the benefits of a regional market. So with that kind of level setting, when you look at the findings from the report in terms of the overall net benefit to California ratepayers, what the study found is in the 2030 timeframe, those benefits range from $1 billion to $1.5 billion. You know, essentially identical to what you saw in the May preliminary material. Those benefit estimates represent about a 2 to 3% reduction in retail rates, with the higher end of this estimate reflecting that Regional 3 case.
Those are annual savings.
Thank you, Tom. Those are annual savings. So, you know, we do expect those annual benefits will continue beyond 2030. The four categories of benefits that we quantified are savings from reduced capital investments in meeting the 50% goal. With the regional market, because you are able to significantly reduce renewable curtailments, you can achieve the 50% goal by building fewer renewable projects, so there's direct capital savings with that. The second category, loosely called market efficiency benefits, that come about from the regional market by being able to more optimally dispatch resources across the regional footprint and more optimally use the grid. There are savings to California utilities that accrue from that. Third category, just to really dumb it down, is you can think of as savings from reduced capital investment in meeting future reliability needs by virtue of the larger footprint. So this is commonly referred to as a load diversity benefit, with different areas of the West having peak demand at different seasons. It provides an opportunity for these different areas to leverage the resources from other areas and avoid some investment in new generation to meet their growing demands. So there's some benefits from that. And then finally, the fourth category is savings in the funding the ISO operation. So as California, as this regional market expands, our costs are spread over a larger footprint, which means California has to pay less of the ISO's operating costs. So those are the categories. That, again, the 2030 benefits range from $1 billion to $1.5 billion in our base case analyses. The 2020 benefits, of course, are much lower, very similar to what you saw on the May results. With a very limited market with just Pacific Core, the benefits are about $55 million in 2020 of annual benefits. And, of course, the driver, what's driving that big increase in 2030 versus 2020 are really two big things. One, we're growing the regional footprint, so we're getting the benefit of a larger regional footprint. And two, we're ramping up the renewables. You're going in 2020 from a 33% RPS to a 50% RPS for California. And the benefit proposition of a regional market increases exponentially as the RPS goes up over time. I'm sensitive to time, and I do want to leave time for questions. So let me quickly go through the other aspects of the study results. On CO2 emissions, again, very similar to the preliminary results, what we're finding is by 2030, the expanded regional market will reduce California CO2 emissions for the state's electricity sector by 4 to 5 million metric tons, which is about 8 to 10% of the total emissions for that sector. And then west-wide, the regional market will further reduce CO2 emissions for the entire West by 10 to 11 million metric tons, which is about 3.5% of the total for the electric sector for the West. In 2020, again, with a very limited market footprint with just Pacific Core, there's really very little change in CO2 emissions between the current case and the ISO and Pacific Core case. In fact, there's a very slight increase in emissions both for California and WEC-wide. And by slight, in the case of California, it's 0.2 million metric tons, which is about 0.3%. And in the case of WEC, it's 0.6 million metric tons, which is a 0.2% increase. And you need to bear in mind when I say increase, in 2020, the emissions go down dramatically for both California and the WEC. In both the non-regional case and the regional case with Pacific Core. So what we're really talking about is, another way to describe it is under the regional case with Pacific Core, the CO2 emissions don't decrease relative to where they are today quite as much as the non-market case, but they do decrease in both cases, just not quite as much, and the difference is very, very small. As far as criteria pollutants, NOx, SO2, and particulate matters, what the study finds is the emissions for 2030 show that a regional ISO would decrease these emissions from the electricity sector, both in California and the rest of the WEC. However, with 2020, we do see in the 2020 case a slight increase in NOx and SO2 for the rest of the WEC. And that, again, is driven by the very slight increase in coal dispatch that we're seeing in 2020. That increase in coal is about a 0.4% increase. And we did, elaborate and do some further analyses and assessment of what might be driving that and what, in particular, in the limitations of the modeling might be driving it versus what we're likely to see in reality. On the economic side, in terms of the statewide economic impacts of the regional market, overall, we're finding the regional market benefits the California economy. We're seeing increases in the gross state product of 1.2 to 1.7 billion by 2030. Increase in state household real income increases 300 to 550 per household. Very substantive findings there. And importantly, on the jobs front, the study finds that by 2030, the regional market will produce an additional 9,900 to 19,300 jobs, depending on the regional scenario. And there's obviously some dynamics in the job assessment where under these regional cases, you're generally seeing fewer renewable projects needing to be built to meet the 50% RPS. So you're losing some direct construction jobs, but that's more than offset by the indirect jobs that arise from having lower retail electric rates, which puts more disposable income in California consumers' pockets and stimulates the economy and indirect employment. So that indirect employment effect, as I said, offsets the some of the lost construction jobs for a net positive employment gain. And I would note these gains from indirect jobs are long-term due to the fact that we expect these retail rate savings will continue out into the future. Moving right along on the environmental impacts to California and elsewhere, we touched on the emissions already. With regard to the other aspects of environmental impact, the study was quite comprehensive. It looked at land use, impact on land use, biological resources, water use, and essentially found that with respect to land use, again, by virtue of the fact that you can meet the 50% RPS by building fewer renewable projects, you're disturbing less land. So there's a positive benefit on land impact. It varies by the regional case from 42,600 acres of reduced land impact in the Regional 2 case to over 73,000 acres in the Regional 3 case. There is, however, as noted in the report, some shifting of impact, particularly in Regional 3, where as you build more renewables in other states, obviously there'll be some land impact there. And if you have to build transmission to access those renewables, there'll be land impact and biological resource impacts with those. But overall, the assessment is on net, land use impacts are reduced under the regional market scenario. And similarly, water use associated with construction and ongoing maintenance, even for renewable facilities, solar, has some water use. So in some of these areas where we have, depleted groundwater sources, this reduction in water use is, seen as a significant environmental benefit as well. And then, of course, the study shows in the 2030 cases particularly, we're relying less on the California gas fleet, and that's reducing not just emissions but also water use associated with those plants as well. The impact on disadvantaged communities, a lot of what I've already discussed on the statewide economics and environmental impacts for the state carry over to the disadvantaged communities. So we're seeing economic benefits to the disadvantaged communities. The economic stimulus of that the regional market provides applies to these disadvantaged communities, particularly in the some of the most extreme disadvantaged communities in the Inland Valley, Greater Los Angeles, Central Valley area. The study notes the incomes in these areas would increase to $170 to $340 in annual household incomes, and that employment would rise by 1,300 to 4,600 jobs between 2020 and 2030. And then certainly the environmental benefit of less construction-related environmental impacts in the vicinity or in disadvantaged communities documented in the report, as well as the reduction in generation from gas-fired power plants that are located in these disadvantaged communities. And then finally, on the reliability and integration benefits, I already touched on the integration benefits that are quantified in the net ratepayer analysis of being able to, effectively avoid large amounts of renewable curtailments and achieve the RPS with fewer capital investment. But of course, there's a whole suite of unquantified benefits that the report points out, notably the reliability benefits of having a centralized control over a larger operational footprint. It gives operators better situational awareness of what's happening on the grid and better flexibility in terms of managing grid contingencies. So overall, there's that's just an example of some of the reliability benefits. We also think the what hasn't really been quantified here is the ability to get more out of the existing infrastructure we have with a larger footprint and centralized operation. It can possibly support higher path ratings because we can better manage the kinds of contingencies that are driving some of those ratings, as well as studies have shown in areas where you have these organized markets, the availability of generation goes up because they have a greater incentive to maintain high levels of availability. It's an opportunity to get more out of the existing fleet, especially the thermal resources. And then the planning benefits, haven't been quantified, but doing centralized planning over a larger footprint leads to, better planning studies, more cost-effective solutions, and importantly, on some of those solutions, the ability to do cost sharing on projects that might otherwise not get built. So we think there's a whole suite of unquantified benefits that the report lays out in some detail, and certainly we had a number of stakeholders highlight those unquantified benefits as well. So I think that's in a nutshell kind of the key findings. As far as next steps, I did mention the sensitivities that we'll put out next week. We do have the joint agency workshop scheduled, as was mentioned, on July 26. That will be in Sacramento, and that workshop will, in the morning, review the results of the study. We'll have the consulting team there to review those results with the heads of the state energy agencies, and then in the afternoon we'll go over the governance proposal. So it'll be a very full day, but a very important day. And I guess that's really all I had to say. And I'll stop there and turn it over to any questions.
Yeah, so we do have about 30 minutes for questions. You can enter the queue by pressing pound 2 on your telephone keypad. Just a reminder to please state your name and your affiliation before asking your question. We're just going to, we'll take questions about the summary that Keith provided today. Again, we're going to go into a more in-depth review of the findings at the July 26 workshop, and you'll have an opportunity to ask questions there as well. So, Lauren, are there any questions in queue?
At this moment, I do not see any questions in the queue. As a reminder, dial pound 2 to enter the question queue.
Okay, well, while we're waiting for people to enter the queue, if you do have a question, again, press pound 2. Just a reminder, all of the results are available on the website. They were posted earlier today. We have an aggregated report, 688 pages, and we also published individual volumes for each topic, just to make it easier if you're looking for information about a specific topic. Keith also mentioned that we have a stakeholder questions and comments ISO responses to the comments. We published that document as well. That's all on the Regional Energy Markets webpage. So anybody in the queue yet, Lauren?
No one in the queue at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And again, you know, we look forward to seeing you at the July 26th workshop. That details related to participating in that workshop are available on our website. You can reference the public calendar, the ISO public calendar. So thank you for joining us, and have a great rest of your day.